Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Have a lot of good information to share. As always, we begin our program with health and healing in order to live a longer and happier life. Soy may help women's hearts if they start early. Eating probiotics regularly improves your blood pressure. And what are the health benefits of chickpeas? Also, we'll be looking at cancer can be driven by epigenetic changes. That's important, and I'll share a lot on that. Some cancer cells are characterized by both high sugar intake and high morbidity. Not good if you eat sugar. Also, the latest research from the British Medical Journal shows the importance of eating nuts to control your blood sugar and diabetes. An interesting study about pesticide, DDT, linked to slow metabolism, obesity, diabetes. Major killers. But hold on. It was just supposed to kill mosquitoes. It did. But then it also helped poison hundreds of millions of people worldwide. Acupuncture can significantly improve the quality of life for breast cancer patients. And asparagus, never talk about it. We will. Most Americans don't eat it. They should. We have also a lot today to share with you on public health, including, finally, a group of doctors. These are just mainstream physicians. Published an article in the Toronto Star against mandatory flu vaccines for healthcare workers. That means doctors, nurses, people working in hospital settings. They say the evidence of the benefits of the vaccination are not nearly as strong to justify taking away the doctor's right not to have it. I see. So when it comes to objecting to mandatory vaccines for kids, you don't say anything, but when it's your body that's going to have those toxins, now you're concerned. Well, okay, that's still fair. If you're concerned about your bodies, maybe it'll go in reverse now. Now you'll see that the entire field of vaccine science is science fiction. I'll share that with you. Stigmatizing and shunning the severely ill by one of the leading psychiatrists in the world, Dr. Alan Francis, from Psychology Today. My concern, why I want to share this with you on this program, is because we have 400,000 people suffering from mental problems who we put in prison. In prison, they end up being killed, beaten, because they don't act according to the rules of prison life. They have mental problems. Now, do you know that we have 1,000% more people with mental problems in prison than in hospitals? What we need in this society are humane, holistic, humanistic centers for people with mental problems to be helped, not prisons like Rikers Islands and these other gulags where they're going to be tortured, because that's all we're doing. We put them in solitary confinement. They get the worst of treatments. I'll deal with that. And Huffington Post finally comes out with an article against genetically modified organisms as being safe. Okay, nice to have you finally wake up. My guest in the second part of our program is John Whitehead. He is an attorney. He is the founder of the Rutherford Institute about civil liberties, human rights. And we're going to talk about something that many people, but not all in this audience, are concerned with: the continual rise in police violence and brutality against American citizens. What is the end? What is the outcome? What is the goal? I'm now posting those videos that I have determined show that there was no reason for the police to use force, undue force, restraint, and murder, killing people. There was just one I posted today of a woman in a church parking lot, doing nothing that should have caused the police to to do anything to her, but not only did the policeman do something to her, he pulled out his gun and shot through a window and killed her. Why? Is this a rare occasion? Let me tell you how bad it is. We now have had more Americans killed by our police than all the casualties in the Iraq War, American casualties. That tells you we've got a serious problem. But people are afraid to deal with it. We shouldn't be afraid. That does not mean that all police have criminal intent or are racist, but it means that this is not simply a few bad apples. This is endemic. And now that they're militarizing the police with SWAT teams, it's real serious. We're going to take a look at this. I do not know if I'll have time to deal with other issues, but if I do, then I'm going to deal with the glacial melt and its politics in a way that gives you a really dramatic understanding that the people on fascist Fox News Network and other, you know, Wonderbread for the Brain, NPR, and these other places, and MSNBC, they've never seen a Democrat they didn't like. They're embarrassing how biased they are. Why haven't they come out and told you the truth about how bad global warming is? Because it's not the economic and political interests of those who are part of the problem. But we'll show you how bad it is, especially with the melting of Greenland, because I predicted this 5 years ago when I said, one day you're all going to wake up. And because we are in chaos theory, huge chunks of the glacier of Greenland are going to simply crack, calve, and go into the ocean. And anything that has ever calved before will seem minor by comparison. It's happening now as I speak, and I'll give you the latest on that. Also, we're going to hear from Max Keiser today, one of the very, very few people. Radigan is another one that had the courage to speak out about who are these people on Wall Street who have so much power and control over everything, like Goldman Sachs. Max is smart. Max does his homework. Max speaks out today about Wall Street, and this is after a report today that came out from the Wall Street people, the Wall Street Journal, quote, Wall Street Journal reported the entire United States market has become one vast dark pool, end quote. Remember I told you don't trust the stock market? It's a bubble. It's an equity bubble. The people invest, in my opinion, generally speaking, in Wall Street, the ones who make the money are doing so because there's just a greed factor. They're not stupid. They know that it's a bubble. They want to get in, get as much money as they can, get out before the bubble pops. It's going to pop. But this goes far beyond that. Eavesdropping on America, the National Security Agency's Orwellian surveillance state, Norman Solomon. Research reveals pervasive implicit hierarchies of race, religion, and age. The vulture, the chewing Argentina's living corpse by Greg Palast. We deal with a lot of issues, all of them meant to give us insights into areas hitherto not explored. Let's begin. Most people don't think about what's in a particular item when they eat it. They just like the taste. It's a part of their normal cuisine. We're creatures of habit. Whatever we ate on Monday, we want it every Monday. On Sunday, we want it every Sunday. We want the portion size. We want the taste, the mouthfeel, the aftertaste. We want a certain perception. Salty and crunchy, soft and sweet. So we don't really get into, why am I eating this? Why is it good for me? Now, this is mainstream science giving you this. This is medical news today. Quote, originally cultivated in the Mediterranean and the Middle East, chickpeas, also known as garbanzo beans, have spread their culinary influence to areas all over the world. They were once prominently featured in Italian, Greek, Indian, Middle Eastern, Spanish, and Portuguese cuisine. Though most common type of chickpeas appear round and beige, other varieties include colors such as black, green, and red. And like other legumes, such as beans, peas, and lentils, chickpeas are prized for their high protein and fiber content, and also contain several key vitamins and minerals. And then it gets into what some scientific studies have shown are the content within chickpeas and why it's so good for you. And they're saying here, diabetes. Quote, studies have shown that type 1 diabetics who consume high-fiber diets have lower blood glucose levels, and type 2 diabetics have improved blood sugar levels and insulin levels. So they're recommending this. Bone health, the iron, the phosphate, the calcium, magnesium, manganese, zinc, and vitamin K content present in chickpeas all contribute to building and maintaining bone structure and strength. Blood pressure. Maintaining a low sodium intake is essential to lowering blood pressure. However, increasing potassium intake may be just as important because of its vasodilation effects. And this you get with chickpeas. Heart health. A high fiber, potassium, vitamin C, and vitamin C B6 content, coupled with the lack of cholesterol found in chickpeas, all support heart health. Cancer. Selenium is a mineral that is not present in most fruits and vegetables, but can be found in chickpeas. It plays a role in liver enzyme function and helps detoxify some cancer-causing compounds in the body. It prevents inflammation, and it decreases tumor growth rates. And it also has folate, which plays a role in DNA synthesis and repair, thus preventing the formation of cancer cells from mutating in the DNA. Saponins, which are phytochemicals present in chickpeas, prevent cancer cells from multiplying and spreading throughout the body. And high fiber intake in chickpeas are associated with lowered risk of colorectal cancer. It even has vitamin C. Then it has cholesterol. It lowers cholesterol. Inflammation. Choline, that's C-H-O-L-I-N-E, is a very important and versatile nutrient in chickpeas to help with sleep, muscle movement, learning and memory, digestion and regularity. And chickpeas help with both. Weight management, it helps, and it extends the lifespan. So all these things that chickpeas do, and all that from mainstream science and medicine. So good for them. Now, there was a controversy about 7 years ago where soybeans were being hammered. And there was a Weston Price Foundation that was leading the charge. And one of the authors of the study about how bad soybeans were and why we should be having a different diet appeared on my radio program. And before they could get into promoting meat, organic meat, and eggs, free-running chickens, giving eggs and milk, hormone-free milk, I ask him a simple question. Have you received money directly or indirectly from any foundation or group that is promoting dairy, meat, eggs for you to be on this tour? And with that, the interview is over. The person hung up. Fair enough. Well, I wouldn't have asked a question had I not already done my homework and known the answer. I wrote a substantial letter to the Weston Price Foundation, and though I commended them on suggesting organic, and they're right there, and I support that, when you look at the totality of what it means to raise animals for human consumption, including the methane gases that can contribute up to 18% of the total global warming factor, plus the health of an animal and the health of the meat eaten from the animal. Why should I eat meat from a cow in order to get amino acids when the cow has to be given a tremendous amount of water compared to legumes, beans, potatoes? 60 gallons of water is all it needs to grow a potato. For one hamburger, it's over 2,300 gallons. So when we're in a situation of needing to reserve and conserve our water, we shouldn't be using it in amounts we are on cattle. Then it's how you prepare the meat, any meat. If you eat it raw, you run the risk of parasites and worms, including roundworm and ringworm. And those can be devastating. If you cook it until everything is substantially killed, that's pathogenic, except you cannot kill mad cow virus. You could go to 700 degrees, you wouldn't be able to kill it. Then it creates heterocyclic amines, which cause cancer and are highly inflammatory. And the phenomenon of having an animal protein uric acid, highly acidic body level of toxins, stressing both the kidneys and the intestine. And the fact that we do not have high levels of hydrochloric acid with short intestines for quick digestion, as cats and dogs do, and carnivorous, we have a long intestine with enzymes and chewing and saliva, all meant to facilitate the breakdown of plant foods. It's simply the reality. So that was the argument. But then their argument was also tacking everything soy. So what I did was, for the next year, we looked at every single scientific study in the world to show, are soybeans good for us or bad for us? And we found, after 5,000 studies, that 99% were positive for soy. And only a few studies, a handful, showed negative impact, and those were principally when the diet was substantially a soy-based diet for people with thyroid problems. I would agree, wrong to have. And also for genetic modification of soybeans. Those I'm against because they're grown in South America. You have to strip out the rainforest to grow them, and that increases global warming, displacement of indigenous people. And why feed 16 to 21 pounds of grains or beans to an animal to get 1 pound of meat in return? It's much like that, Ed. I'm sure you saw Alec Baldwin in the commercial, and then now Samuel Jackson in the commercial, where in his intense, great actor manner, he says, you know, what's in your wallet, and stares at you like you're about to get a lecture. And you're getting 1% or 2%, whatever it is, back every purchase, anytime, anywhere. And people get focused on that. Friends, let me tell you how stupid this commercial is. You're paying a minimum of 18% interest. If you miss a payment or you're late or you can't make a payment or make only a partial payment, that can go up double that or triple that. So let me just see the math here and see if I'm right. You give them 18%, they give you back 1 to 2%. 18, 1. And yet they focus upon what they're giving you as if somehow you should go spend money and buy things because you're getting 1 or 2% back on every purchase. And you're giving them 18% on every purchase. It's just, it's clever how smart they are in figuring out how to manipulate people and thinking, hey, I better use that credit card. I can get 1% back. In any case, so when I looked at these studies on soy, I found that there was more misinformation. But excluding all studies having to do with the growing of soy by soy manufacturers, 93% of all the scientific literature supports the health benefits of soy. So this was no longer a case of soy good or bad. It's good, non-genetically engineered organic soy. But why would people go to such a length to deny it? Because if someone had been eating soy or having a soy milkshake or whatever it is, or soy health shake, then they're not going to be eating your beef for the protein, because an amino acid is amino acid. The amino acid in soy, the lysine in soy, the tryptophan in soy, well, you've got that in meat. One's going to cost you a lot, the other's going to cost you less. One creates a lot of problems for the environment, one doesn't have the problems for the environment. So I just want people to know there's a background story to this. Here's the latest on soy. Published in the peer-reviewed journal Menopause. A diet rich in soy may help female hearts. Lifelong soy consumption, similar to the diet of women in Asia, produces, quote, the least atherosclerosis. Switching to a Western diet after menopause, similar to the Asian migrants in North America, leads to just as much atherosclerosis as a lifelong Western diet. and switching to soy from a Western diet after menopause helps only if there is much isn't much atherosclerosis. Researchers at Wake Forest School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, reached those conclusions based upon their feeding study, and it goes on. So what this is saying is this. In Asian culture, soy is not dominant, but it is a part of the diet. You have root vegetables, which are dominant, other legumes, which are dominant, sea vegetables, which are dominant, occasionally fish, if it's available, which is dominant, little meat, unless they're very affluent, then they want the Western diet, and soy or fermented soy products like miso. They have less heart disease, less cancer, live longer lives, and are healthier in that longer life. A woman in Asia, I'm not talking about one that may be a refugee, I'm talking about a normal lifespan person, will be far healthier at the age of 60 than an American woman. When they come to America and they switch to an American diet, which has that meat and eggs and dairy, then they end up with the same amount of heart disease. Starting after menopause to a healthier diet, if you don't really change your habits, you're not going to see much of a benefit. So that's what the study says. So just to add one more reason why we should be interested in soy, organic, non-GMO soy. And finally, two statements about cancer. One is from Baylor College of Medicine. It was published in Journal of Clinical Investigations. Quote, cancer has long been thought to be primarily a genetic disease, but in recent decades, scientists have come to believe that epigenetic changes, which don't change the DNA sequence, but how it is read, also play a role in cancer, in particular DNA methylation. The addition of methyl groups or molecules is an epigenetic switch that can stably turn off genes, suggesting the potential to cause cancer just as a genetic mutation can. And then it went on to talk about this. Here's my take on this in lay language. We know that what we think, how we think, how we respond to the stimulation around us, the environment, the people, commands of people, timetables, all of this can impact our DNA, either constructively or negatively. So we can literally turn on and turn off DNA switches that allow the cell to manifest a higher ideal of health or go towards processing disease, in which case cancer can manifest. So those early life messages and then what we've adapted or maladapted to throughout life can make an enormous difference. That's what this is saying. So knowing that, wouldn't it make sense that we then become more aware of the codependent relationships we've had in life? And I'm not talking about codependent with other people. That's easy to figure out. I'm talking about the challenge of the codependency with our own weakest element, our insecurities. What do I mean by that? What I mean is, let's say that you're basically a happy person on the outside, or you project that, but inside, there's a roiling insecurity. So unbeknownst to possibly your conscious mind, functioning at the subconscious level, we react to people and situations based upon our insecurity, the fear of loss. We don't like how we feel, but maybe we're not in a position to change the circumstances. So we do the next best thing. We find something that can alleviate our stress, our angst in this moment. We create a codependency with our addictive nature. For some people, it's going to be food. For others, alcohol. If you want more of that mental stimulation because your environment that you're in or the relationship you're in is not mentally stimulating, it is cocaine. For those who really want to shoot forward in a almost like being hurled into space, it's methamphetamine. For those who want an instantaneous removal of their immediate environment, it's crack cocaine. For people who want to be more mellow and hence have a lower impact upon stress, it's marijuana. For those who simply want to be out of the clear, hyper-chronic control of the moment, it's alcohol. You get that buzz, and you're slightly disoriented. You slur, you can't focus. Each and every one of these are a form of codependency. They all work. Everything works. That's what makes them so terrifying. If you want to remove yourself from the reality of the moment because you feel that the circumstances you're in are not ones you like, you alter your perception of the reality. You don't change your reality. You merely alter your perception of it. And drugs, alcohol, anxiety, smoke cigarettes. The nicotine for a period of time will have you feeling less anxious. That's why the more anxious people are, the more they have smoked historically. Medications can do the same thing. Painkillers can change your perception of your pain, but it doesn't change the pain. It makes you addictive. Now when you start coming off the medication, you start coming off the cocaine, you start coming off the alcohol, you start coming off the sugar craving, coming off whatever you're addicted to, now suddenly, oh my God, there's reality. I don't like how this feels. And back you go. That's the codependent relationship we have. People are codependent upon watching people on television because they don't have to think deeply on any issue. Someone else is supposedly doing it for them. So you trust another person, a Rush Limbaugh, you know, whoever it may be. Many times these are merely patricians. These are people who have connected themselves with their own elite historical background and don't really see the world as you see it, but they're going to tell you how you should see it. And if you're not willing to do your own homework, if you're not willing to get out of your own biased mind, you'll identify with them. Hence Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, you know, Lawrence O'Donnell, Rachel Maddow, Keith Urban. They all have their followings, albeit small, but they have them. Why? Because you don't have to break your codependency. They take you away from an altered reality. They give you an altered perception of what truth is. It's almost all then ideological, left, right, liberal, conservative. That's how bad we can be when it comes, and dependent we can be to the internal codependency of our own maladaptive subconscious conditioning. That's epigenetic. And so that's why, once you know that, the best thing we can do is try to get ourselves into quiet, mindful places and stay focused upon the moment we're in and do your own homework, do your own research. Take the time to do your own scholarship. There's nothing so complex that you can't figure it out. People have led you to believe that you can't figure it out, and that's why you should trust them. There are no complex answers. There's only extraordinarily convoluted problems. And finally, on cancer, some cancer cells are characterized by both high sugar intake and high mobility. From Medical News Today, as published in Cancer Metabolism, quote, cancer cells are gluttons. We have long known what they monopolize, large amounts of sugar. More recently, it has become clear that some tumor cells are also characterized by a series of features such as mobility and unlikeliness to join in an ordered set. Researchers are calling this behavior a promoting of metastasis. Well, the article ends up telling you that the more sugar you eat, be careful, because cancer loves sugar. And these cells in the body can move around. Nuts are good for you. The British Medical Journal says nuts are great because they can reduce, quote, triglycerides and fasting blood levels. So if you're diabetic, if you're overweight, if you're pre-diabetic, you have bad lipid profile, eating walnuts, almonds, cashews, hazelnuts, macadamia nuts, pecans, pine nuts, pistachios, Brazil nuts, they're all good. So have some every day. That's our health and nutrition update. That's 30 minutes of information that hopefully will make a difference in our lives. We're going to take a brief break, come back, I'll give you our environmental information, and then we'll go to our guest. I want to do some public health stuff. We have a lot still to share. Stay with us.
Day after day, I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose. and the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
I'd like to welcome all of you. And we have a lot of people around the world who ask questions. We try to provide insights. We select articles that are universal. So no matter where you live in the world, we're trying to present information that can help you. And we are putting up dozens and dozens of articles per day. So, and things that also inspire, things that will motivate. We had an enormous response to Coco the gorilla when Coco had a kitten, and she loved the kitten and would play with it every day and hug it and kiss it, and the kitten loved the Coco. And then after a year, the little kitten was a cat and went off the property and got killed by a car on a road. And then you see the scene where Coco's handler has to explain to her in words and sign language that her little friend is dead. You see her telling you, the gorilla, explaining in language, in facial expressions, what it means to have that loss. For those of you who never thought that animals had perception, sensitivity, understanding, this is one big eye-opener. So watch that. It's up on my Facebook, and it gives you an idea. I helped raise Kokomo Jr. I wrote a manuscript on it, From Instinct to Intellect, a Study of Primates. Kokomo Jr. appeared on the David Garraway Show. I could sit with Kokomo and share with her over 170 different words, and she knew exactly what the words meant. You would never imagine how deep and profound a primate can think and feel. So I continue to put those kind of images up, videos up, because I believe we have to be reminded of our humanity. Reminded not to walk by a homeless person without stopping and thinking, there for the grace of God go I. Remind yourself of your spiritual connection. Don't be indifferent to it. Connect with it. That's how we make the world a better place, in service to others in need. Now to our public health segment and to our environmental segment. First, from Robert Hunziker from Counterpunch, an article entitled Glacial Melt and Its Politics. This is really good, and this falls in line with what I've been saying, that we are in chaos theory, that no human being can tell you that we're not going to have the oceans rising for 100 years. It's not true. They're rising now. I can show you islands in the Pacific that are now having to be abandoned. Entire populations, 10,000 people in the Marshall Islands, have to leave because the water's coming up over their roads, flooding their fields, the salt water is destroying their crops. This isn't in the future. This is right now as we speak. And I'm concerned, I believe within the very near future, in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see a giant calving off Antarctica and Greenland. And when I say giant, I'm talking about something that will be miles and hundreds of miles in diameter. And when that drops, you're going to see the ocean rise overnight. And then it's going to set into motion a whole domino effect of calving behind it. So that is where we're at now. Here's what he says. Quote, America's single most pressing issue for the foreseeable future is a changing climate, more important than immigration, health care, or the ever-present wars, because those can be fixed. The changing climate cannot be fixed. Once broken, it stays broken, and it gets worse and worse until life becomes unbearable, too late to fix. In that regard, it is believed that a small nucleus of people is behind the climate denial movement in America, and they have been successful. The U.S. Congress has thumbed its nose on the climate issue, while its in-house deniers talk about, well, the climate always changes, and the science is suspect, and they're cheating. Where Al Gore is in cahoots with Hollywood. Their flippant remarks are remarkably, singularly hollow in substance, but then again, so are they. Hence, They block any meaningful effort to challenge the climate change issue, as, for example, a nationwide all-out massive effort to get off the deadly fossil fuel bandwagon. Congress may dawdle while climate change surges ahead, but the price to pay is already registering in glacial melts, which challenges the world's food supply, electric power supply, drinking water, agriculture irrigation, seawater rise, and navigable commercial waterways. And if that's not enough, more. It was the year 1912 when a glacier in Greenland spawned an iceberg that rocked the world. Moreover, that iceberg's image made it into the movies 85 years later, starring alongside Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet in Titanic. Now, 102 years later, the infamous glacier is setting new records in its race to the ocean as it flows at the rate of 150 feet a day. You don't think that's a lot? For glaciers, it's a huge, huge increase per day. Used to be inches per week. 150 feet a day. The new study in the journal Cryosphere finds that its flow rate is nearly 300% its rate in the 1990s. And as far as massive glaciers go, this is huge. According to Penn State glaciologist Richard Ailey, even though the Greenland ice sheet does not seem to be collapsing wholesale, the changes detected at this one place, quote, are not good news for the ice sheet or for the people living near the sea level, end quote. And that's according to Jane Lee, National Geographic, Greenland Glaciers, and published in the National Geographic Daily News. Why are the world's glaciers melting like crazy? According to the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado, glaciers and climate change, quote, heat-trapping gases, sometimes called greenhouse gases, are the cause of most of the climate warming and glacier retreat in the past 50 years. Amazingly, the 1991 discovery of the 5,000-year-old Iceman preserved in a glacier in the European Alps fascinated the world. Yeah. Tragically, this also means that this glacier is retreating farther now than it has in 5,000 years, and other glaciers are as well, end quote. And as for greenhouse gases, according to the EPA, greenhouse gases are defined as gases that trap heat in the atmosphere are called greenhouse gases. And they're proliferating. As it so happens, using the United States as an example, the greenhouse gas emissions and measuring the four key gases, methane, nitrous oxide, and fluorinated gases, and carbon dioxide, 82% of the greenhouse gas emissions consist of carbon dioxide, and CO2 enters the atmosphere principally by burning coal and gas and oil. Solar and wind don't produce any. Ipso facto, since greenhouse gases derive from burning fossil fuels, trapping heat, causing the big melt, and knowing that greenhouse gases derive from fossil fuels burned by humans, there is really no issue about what's behind the global warming controversy. None whatsoever. As such, why isn't there a debate about whether the United States should get off fossil fuels? Indeed, and candidly, there's really nothing to debate about when the issue is so black and white, and maybe that's why there's no debate. Unless there is, there's a more plausible explanation other than the burning of oil, gas, and coal as the cause of the relentlessly prodigious world glacial melt-off, which is accelerating, quote, like crazy. So why isn't the United States pushing a massive nationwide program of conversion from fossil fuel to renewable energies? As for one example of what to do, a program similar to the big push to go to the moon in the 1960s would seem appropriate. If the United States was smart enough to go to the moon 50 years ago, shouldn't the U.S. be smart enough today to see the light of day and convert from fossil fuels to renewables, especially so when considering the upshot of not converting to renewables as the disruptive colossal force of global warming unhinges agricultural crop production, which in turn will lead to riots? I predicted it on this program. Look, be reasonable. Do your homework. What was the underlying cause of 26 separate nation revolts in the last 5 years? It was not their body politic. It wasn't being controlled by a despotic ruler or military dictator like Mubarak. It was because the price of food. It was that primal, that fundamental. When people have nothing to eat and they have children, they're going to steal, they're going to beg, or they're going to fight. And we seem to be completely indifferent to that in our society. Now, many people are kind-hearted, many people are compassionate, and they feel other people's suffering. And then we have about 80% of Americans who don't give a damn about anything except their own selfish needs. And add in about 99%. I'll give 1% of members of Congress who are also compassionate and care, but the rest don't. They're part of the problem. So just understand, here's the reality. Like it or not, we are tipping. The North Cascade Glacier Climate Project has said this, quote, "Since 1980, glacier retreat has become increasingly rapid and ubiquitous, so much so that it has threatened the existence of many of the glaciers of the world. This process has increased markedly since 1995, leading to such bizarre steps as covering sections of alpine glaciers in Austria with plastic to retard melting. The World Glacier Monitoring Service has noted 19 consecutive years of negative mass balances that its volume is losing. If a business had 19 consecutive years losing money, they would be bankrupt. So in conclusion, I'm asking this audience this, of all which begs a poignant question for those in the denial camp of human-caused climate change and global warming. If not because of human use of fossil fuels, heat-trapping gases, then what is the specific cause of the monstrous meltdown? The problem with continuing fossil fuel usage is the portion of the planet depends upon glacial runoff for drinking water, irrigation of their crops, primary source for major commercial rivers, and for hydropower. And the more glaciers recede, the more likely desperate people, short of water, will be forced to react in a desperate manner, like crashing the gates. Glacial loss brings reduced summer runoff, providing fewer resources for hydropower and irrigation and drinking water in Europe, the Himalayas, the Andes, Western North America. And over time, major commercial rivers like the Yangtze, they turn anemic. According to Chen Hanning, senior engineer for a mapping bureau, 70% of the glaciers at the headwaters of the Langgang River, one of Southeast Asia's most important rivers, known as the Danube of the East, have disappeared. That's completely gone. 70%. That's two-thirds. And in South America, the World Bank has expressed deep concern about shortages of water resources for nearly 100 million people as a result of one half of the Andes glaciers gone in the past 30 years. It only took 30 years, 50% gone. And yet we still have the people who have the chutzpah to be denying this. Well, you'll see when the big iceberg breaks, or when the ice breaks off Greenland, and it'll happen in the near future. I'm Gary Noll. I will continue tomorrow to deal with the other topics at hand. I always have more on a given day than what I have time to share, but I like to give a variety of topics on the issue. Let us now go to my guest, standing by in Charlottesville, Virginia, John Whitehead. John, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, is one of America's leading constitutional law and human rights attorneys. He founded the Rutherford Institute, which is a nonprofit civil liberties and human rights organization down in Charlottesville, Virginia. And he is here to talk about the continued rise in police violence and brutality against American citizens. He is the author of In the Government of the Wolves, The Emerging American Police State. His website is Rutherford, R-U-T-H-E-R-F-O-R-D.org. Nice to have you with us, John.
Hey, thank you, sir.
John, the ACLU has a police brutality report on its website showing a rise, tremendous rise in police assaults on deaf people. For example, a 64-year-old deaf man pulled over in his car and reaching for a placard stating he was deaf. When the patrolman approached the car, he was pulled out of the car and beaten almost to a pulp. A black 14-year-old carrying a puppy was tackled and choked by police for giving them the policeman said he didn't like his stare. Cops go undercover to best special needs kids in school. This month in New York City, a man trying to break up a fight between two men was impaled on top of by officers and died when his head was slammed to the pavement. He committed no crime. Last year, there was a case of Texas police forcing a man to set up a drug deal so they could acquire a kilo of coke for themselves. Increased incidents of police raiding the wrong homes, killing people. Police are constantly profiling blacks and minorities. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the police are doing their job by talking with people in a civil way and trying to understand their issues. Some I know are. But are they searching, frisking people coming out of Broadway plays? Or do they have 1,000 men that every time someone comes out of a Wall Street firm, they're searching? Because if they were, you'd find more cocaine there than any other place on the planet.
Yeah.
All right. Are they searching people coming out of the White House, like Secret Service people? Are, you know, the punks in our society, are they searching in Bill O'Reilly? Are they doing an alcohol liver test on him? All right. So you see, I'm concerned that we have a double standard. If you're rich and powerful and white, you get a pass more often than not. If you're not, you get slammed. And when you get slammed, I've seen so much. I'm putting it up on my Facebook, some of the most egregious examples. In Austin, Texas, a woman was doing a morning jog, and the police stopped her because she had ran across not at the street light. There was no traffic, but she had jaywalked.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
And then they arrested her.
Yep.
You know, and slammed her up against a car. Why? Is there something going on within the psyche of the police that they feel that everyone is a suspected terrorist and they must? And then the worst case of all is when you see a naked man in Brooklyn naked and they shoot him and kill him.
Yes.
Or the guy in New Mexico. Here's a man, just a homeless person, bothering no one, just camping out in the woods, and they approach him, I think 6 or 7 guys, all with full body armor, all with high powered rifles, and they kill him. They shoot him to death. And this is the 14th guy they've killed recently. And yet they do it and say, well, we felt threatened, and their unions support them, and the local heads of police more often than not support them, and the media bends over backwards to support them.
And the courts support.
Your thoughts. Take us through this.
Oh, yeah. I've been writing on this for almost 10, 15 years, Rise of SWAT Team Raids, Police Violence. As I show in my book, A Government of Wolves, psychological studies show that once you put the body armor on, and the new trend now with SWAT Team Raids and some of the when they're locking down roads now, the policemen actually are wearing black masks. They have no badges. All you see is that word police. So I work with a lot of older policemen who say it's how they're being trained in the academies. That's one problem. The other problem is, as I indicate, the psychological studies show that once you put on that type of gear, how you view the person you're looking at, if it's not a fellow policeman, you view them as an enemy combatant. And that has been proven over and over again. And I've actually had people email me saying they've dropped out of police academies, they've read my book, A Government of Wolves, and they see how the aggressive kind of tactics that are being taught in the police academies. I have a friend who teaches in a big police academy, and he said, John, I'm known as the anti-cop. And I said, why? You teach at an academy, you're known as the anti-cop? I said, why? He says, I teach the Fourth Amendment. So it's the way they're being trained psychologically. That's how they dress. All this military equipment the Department of Homeland Security is handing out, from MRAPs, mine resistance, armored protection vehicles, which they use over in war zones, are like huge tanks, to all the rifles they have, license plate readers, Stingray devices where they download all the your emails and whatever they drive by your house. It's a total different mentality. We're dealing with a standing army, and that's the point right now. So I've seen these cases develop, increase in SWAT team raids up 15% in the last 25 years, where they're going through people's doors, and some of the cases I detail in my book, A Gummit of Wolves, they're shooting innocent people, and they're in the wrong home. They're doing so-called drug raids, and by the way, there are federal grants for drug raids for SWAT teams, so they're actually making money if they do raids. And a lot of the SWAT team raids we're seeing are for mere warrant service, the great majority of them. So we're dealing not with the local police we used to have, and the other thing that I'm seeing that's really troublesome is some of the cases we've been involved where people have been arrested for Facebook posts, anti-government Facebook posts. And this is free speech, by the way, it's the Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, FBI, working with the local police in their black outfits raiding people's homes. So the idea of a local police in the great majority of cities across the country, that's now gone. And the key to local police was is that you knew the guy, he was in your community, now he's connected to the FBI and all those things. Again, I work with a lot of policemen who are meeting with me saying that they don't like the trend, they're really frightened by what's going on, but they don't know how to stop it.
Some people would say, and I want you to give me whether or not you think this is excessive hyperbole, that we are approaching the Weimar Republic of the early 1930s and how we're going about militarizing the police and looking at the citizens all as enemies of the state if they're critical on any level.
You're hitting it right on the head, yeah. I've done an exhaustive study of Nazi Germany. I'd say we're moving in lockstep. It's amazing. It's almost like they've taken what Hitler did and they're following the playbook. It's from the programs where neighbors turn in neighbors to the raids, everything we're seeing. I'm just... The outfits, by the way, I had a group of university students. I have students that study with me throughout the year, and I asked them, I said, I'd like to know where the black outfits came from, because when I was a kid, the cops wore blue or mainly brown. And they did about a two-month study. They came in. They had a report for me, and they said, but I'm going to show you some pictures, Mr. Whitehead. And I said, sure. They said, you might be shocked. And they laid them before me, and the black outfits, ball hats, like you see in a lot of policemen today, it was Nazis. The exact down detail, even the boots. So the color black is the color of authority. It's the non-color. So I've actually had police chiefs say, if I want to reduce violence, what's the first thing I should do? I said, change the color of your uniforms to colors of trust, not authority. Get away from the black Darth Vader look. And the other thing, when you're talking about climate, change the Department of Homeland Security buying all the hollow point bullets, Social Security Administration buying hollow point bullets. They're all arming, passing out hollow point bullets across the United States. People have asked me, why are they doing this? One of the things I list, they may be anticipating climate change. The $385 million that went to Halliburton to build FEMA camps was spent, as far as we know. I've actually had a couple of CIA agents tell me the FEMA camps do exist. They've looked me in the eye, and I say, where? They say, I can't say, and they walk off. So there's an expectation high up in the government. They're very paranoid, the federal government, about where things are headed. I mean, I even talked to local police. I asked a local police chief not too long ago, why you have all these guns, bangs, weapons, tanks, emergency vehicles, and all these things? He said, well, we might have to face a strong contingent. And I said, what does the word contingent mean? He says, I'm not saying. So there's this idea, and the FBI works with local police, fueling this extremist, environmental extremist, militia movement, those people who happen to own a handgun. We're seen as the enemy now. So that's the change of the land. I'm not exaggerating. I have 30 pages of footnotes in my book, and I'm working on a new book now, and it's easy to document. I mean, he who has eyes only has to look.
Final question. Would you speak briefly on how our government is limiting and curtailing free speech, and particularly the right to assembly, and what privileges has law enforcement given to constrain free speech?
Oh, yeah, they're being trained. There's a major project called the Minerva Research Initiative being conducted by the Pentagon now. They're studying all social media, Twitter, text messages, Facebook posts, etc., your emails. They're trying to determine how they can put down what they call civil social unrest. And again, there's not a lot of civil social unrest in America, so I'm going, what are they thinking about? But it's basically free speech activities. We've been involved in a few cases where people are planning to do like an anti-war protest. They communicate by text message, whatever. Before they can even get organized, there's a knock on the door. There stands two FBI agents saying, we want an interview. And they come in, and they try to put down, they try to spoil it, and they do. They intimidate people. We're getting veterans, by the way, who have contacted me. They're doing anti-Obama Facebook posts. They get a knock on the door, or they go home. This is the amazing thing. There's a little thing around their door, a car saying, card hanging on the doorknob saying, FBI is seeking an interview. We will be back. They contact us, and I tell people don't answer their stupid questions. We defend them. But that's the government you're dealing with. I'm not saying they're evil, but it's if you remember the great author Hannah Arendt, she called it the banality of evil. A lot of these people, you look them in the eye and say, why are you doing this? It's just my job. I've got to get after the bad guys. And they're looking at me, and I'm going, am I one of the bad guys?
Hmm.
Yes.
John Whitehead, but you're a bad guy with good on your side because you're defending all of us who want to maintain our freedoms, the Constitution, Bill of Rights. And there are other lawyers who we would hope have and would come forward in joining in this. The book is The Government of Wolves. The website is Rutherford.org. The man who's not afraid to stand up to this tyranny is John Whitehead, an attorney and on constitutional law and human rights. And we thank you, John, for being out there for people.
Hey, thank you for speaking out, sir.
I'm Gary Noll, and that's all the time we have. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You know, I wanted to share this with you. I get a lot of emails from people, and you have there are people in the audience, as much as they listen to you and they love to hear about your information, this whole situation with Israel and the Gaza Strip is a real hot button for people. And it's almost as if they completely lose perspective. It's almost like they don't want to really hear any other perspective except the Israeli half of it. Interestingly, Russell Brand, Katy Perry's ex-husband there, somehow got on Sean Hannity's show, and he was talking about the fact that no one's looking at what really is happening in Gaza. Now, this is a comedian who's saying this to Sean Hannity, and Sean Hannity started interrupting him, and he shot back at him. And the last comment he had was, and besides, you look like a Ken doll, just to throw him off. But I'd love you to address this with the audience. People are just so polarized when it comes to this. Instead of looking at both sides, which is what, from where I'm sitting, you're trying to present us a perspective, a context of why this is happening.
I don't have but 2 minutes because I have to spend the next 2 hours on BAI helping him raise some funds. But I will share this with you. I approach everything with a detached sense of balance. I don't start off with a predetermined conclusion and selectively cherry-pick the information I want that supports that. I simply look historically at everything. As a scholar, as someone who is held accountable to high standards in what I write, I've published over 646 articles, a textbook, over 100 books, 100 documentaries. You have to do your homework. And to do your homework, you can't look at what's happening today. If you do, then you're only going to react based upon the emotions that are brought up in you when you see either side making statements and either side justifying the carnage that is happening and the disproportionate carnage. Instead, you say, where did this come from? How did we evolve to where we have this carnage? Do we have this suffering? Do we have this many dead and injured? And do we have fear and polarization on both the Jewish side and the Palestinian side? So from that perspective, you have to go back and look at where the Palestinians were living, how they were living before 1947. You have to look at the Balfour Amendment. You have to look at the British occupation. You have to go back and look at the late 1800s and the beginning of Zionism and what its purpose was. You have to look at the history of the pogroms and genocide. You have to look at the suffering of the Jews, and you have to look at the context in which they would have wanted a homeland. You then have to look at who the leaders were over those period of times, including those who were themselves terrorists, Menachem Begin, and then you have to look at How did it evolve to where there was a dominance and a displacement, a balance, and what is necessary? So unless you have the complete historical perspective, all you're going to do is react. And the reaction is a subconscious reaction based upon your conditioning. So if you've been conditioned to believe one side of the article of the effort or the other, you're not going to look at what is sacred in the other. You will only see when an Israeli dies as someone who is sacred suffering and dying and the family having to suffer for that. And that is legitimate. But what about when a Palestinian child dies? What about when 300 Palestinian children die? Do you have the same feelings for those children? Or as yesterday, when the rabbi said, the head of rabbis from New York, that if you voted for Hamas, then you're an enemy combatant for all intents and purposes because you're part of the problem. Or members of the Likud party saying that, you know, kill all of them, destroy everything. First and foremost, the ignorance is palpable. Hamas got 440,000 votes. That's 44%. All right. What about the Fatah party? They got 410,000. What about the PFLM party? They got 42,000. So is this collective punishment against one group that collectively does not represent even 50% of all the Palestinians? If everyone thinks that all the Palestinians support Hamas, they are wrong. If Palestinians today were to vote over, they would not vote, I believe, Hamas back into power, because a lot of them, like Obama, being elected by the Democrats, many Democrats today or progressives would see him for what he really is. And hence, a lot of Palestinians would not see the Hamas as legitimate to helping them. They would see them for much of what they represent, which is not constructive. But you don't punish a whole people because of that. And you have to look at the circumstances in which one group is trying to survive versus the quality of life for the other group. And then you start to see the real picture of this and how it has to change. We do not have people giving these measured arguments with historical context. We see reactionary arguments from conditioned and propagandized minds. And that is where the argument ends. I have no more time today. I have to go, but hope that'll give a little bit of insight. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to Utrice. Utrice, got to run. Have a good show.
Thank you.